flesh when we're continuing to any gist, that's okay.
Yeah, right.
No objections to that. Okay.
So
the rains and pavers, that's also good.
Okay.
Fact is that Eretz Yisrael needs rain, period. Yeah. That's all there is to it.
Right.
And I noticed that the last few weeks they've had quite a bit of rain in Eretz Yisrael.
So
thank
good.
God. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm always happy when I see it in the newspaper. You know, I follow the daily weather report from Jerusalem to see what's doing over there. So, at any rate, so what Rabbi Shimon Ben-Gurion says, if you have 7 days of consecutive rain, it's as if the first, second, and third rain have already fallen. Okay? Come on. Now, whose opinion would this tally with? So their answer is Rabbi Yossi, like Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Omer Rabbi Chista, and Rabbi Chista said, Halocha Rabbi Yossi. So, now they say, Bishlamo Ravi Rishaino Lisho. Okay, we can understand, he says, that the first rain, this is the time to do what? To begin to pray for rain. In other words, when do you start in to pray Masha Haruch? When do you start in to say Talamotar? When the first rain falls, or the time when the first rain should be falling, which is, as we said, either the third of Cheshvan or the seventh of Cheshvan. Right, okay? Shlishis, we can understand what the purpose of the third rain is, because if it fails to rain, then in that case, lehisanois, then is the time to begin fasting. But shni olamai, what is the purpose of the second rain? Why do you have to have first rain, second rain, and third rain? The first and the third we can understand, but why the second rain? Some are abzeras, or abzeras said, linidorim, we need this for those who make a neder. And I'll explain that in a second. Ditnan, as the Mishnah says, okay, it's the Mishnah in the Dorm, all right? And it says over there that hanoder ad hageshomim, if a person takes a vow, okay, you have to understand, what is a neder? Neder is a vow that a person takes, okay? Now, the kind of neder that we're talking about over here is what we call nidrei hanoah, which means vows taken wherein you say that you're not going to enjoy or you're not going to take advantage of something or other. You could do it either for yourself, or you could say that I don't want to have anything to do with, let's say, that person's whatever it may be, or something like that.
To do without.
To do without, exactly. If a person says, for example, I make a vow that I'm not going to eat any chocolate. Okay? And he says, I'm not going to eat any chocolate ad hoc shalom, until the rain falls. Okay? So in that particular case, Mishayordu Geshomim, right? Ad hoc shalom, right? So Shemayordu Geshomim, when rain begins falling, Ad Shateridu via Shania.
Is the Nader over at that point then?
Yeah, let me say, Hanodra Alak Shomim. It says, a person takes a vow and he says, Ad Hageshomim. In other words, I take a vow until the time that the rain falls. When the rain falls, then at that point my neder is finished, right? So it says, Mishayerdu Geshomim, if he says that, the reason is there's a little confusion in the text over here, as the note on the side over there indicates over there. Okay? So, the point is that when the rains begin falling, it's not really with the first rain, but if he says, Ad Shatera Devi Ushnia, when the second rain falls, so then this marks the end of his having to do it. But actually, the Gemara in the Dorm over there says he'd have to be very careful as to what the language is. If a person says, you know, Ad in the sense of only up to, then in that particular case, you have to understand what does he have in mind, okay? If it means only up to, but from the moment that the rain falls, then that would be the end of it. But if he says until rains fall, So it means plural, then it has to be more than one rain, exactly. It would have to be also the first rain and the second rain. So then when the second rain begins falling, at that particular point, he is released from his vow. Okay, from his data.
Now,
yes.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
We know Yoga is in Eshimon, and Malkosh is in
Nissen, we said. Right.
Fine. Now, we also know that in Mar Heshbon, there's a first, second, and third rain.
Right.
So when they're talking the Nidarim, the second rain is the second rain of Yoreh.
Right, right. Right. Exactly, yeah. Rab Zvid Omar Lezaisim. He uses the second rain as a time for the harvest of olives. Ditnan, as we learned, is a Mishnah in Shvius, which says as follows. Alright. You have to understand with Shvius, you know, this year right now is the seventh year in Eretz Israel. The law in the Torah is concerning Shvius, not only, you know, that you're not allowed to do any agricultural labor during this year, but you're also not allowed to sell the fruits, you know, and make any profit on
that
them either.
Born
can't,
during
right.
that year.
Right. Because if it took root, you know, prior to Rosh Hashanah, then in that case it's still permitted. But if it first takes root, you know, during the seventh year, then it would be prohibited. Okay? There are all kinds of complications, I don't have to tell you.
Yeah.
Not only that, but we have another complication, and that complication is that we have what we call sefiach. Sefiach means aftergrowth. In other words, after you've harvested something, then there still is a residue. And that in itself, you know, could grow. Now the sefiach also, you're not allowed to consume, you know, to sell, to, it's not allowed to buy or sell sefiach. It's free for all. And at the same time, there's also a law concerning your animals, that as long as there is food in the fields for the animals, then you can keep it in the house for yourself. Keep food in the house for yourself, right? In other words, fruits and stuff. But once there's no more food for the animals to eat in the field, then it says that you have to take it out of your home and give it to the animals.
Before, in deference to the person himself. In other words, the animal comes first.
Yeah. If you take a look again, since we're quoting the second paragraph of the Shema Yisrael, right? It says, "When asati eis b'sadcha b'hemtecha v'yochalta b'savota." So we see over there too that they're concerned that the animals should also have what to eat. And to a certain extent, you know, it's like a priority given. Take care of these poor behemoths, you know, and then take care of your own needs and so on. So these are some of the complications. So the mission over there says, "May Mosai call all the matorim beleket b'shichu v'feyo." So, first of all, when is any person permitted to go and gather the leket, shichu, and feyo? Remember, leket is in the time when they glean, you know, they cut the sheaves. If a sheaf drops down, that's leket, right? Shichu, you put down a sheaf, and then you forgot to come and pick it up, okay? So, naturally, leket and shichu, they belong to the poor people, okay? And peyo, a corner of the field has to be left standing for them, at least. It would be 60th of the field has to be left for the poor. That's a minimum. But frankly, if you have a lot of property and so on, you have to give much more for the poor people, okay? So that has to be left for the poor people. But during Shvius, when, you know, the field presumably is free for all, right? So when can the average person come and take? So first you have to let the poor people, they still have their rights first, okay? Like a chikopeya. So you give them first chance. So it's Mishayelchu Hanemushes, right? So it's from the time that the Nemushos, literally the weak people, they've gone. Beferet uva'ilalos, And when it comes to peret and nevelis, this has to deal with grapes. Peret, they explain that you have individual grapes instead of being in a cluster, but simply individual on the side.
Like berries.
Right. And nevelis are like the not ripened fruit yet, okay, or the immature fruit, that they're not fully grown fruit, all right, these are the nevelis. So these, again, they belong to whom? To the poor.
Poor.
So with them, it's also Mishayelcho Aniyim Bekerem V'yavo. From the time that the poor people go into the vineyard, and then, you know, they return after having harvested whatever they could find. Then, you know, in other words, once they've gone through the field, at that point, then anybody else can come and get, all right? Bezesim, how about with olives? So Mishatei Reid Revi'u, from the time that the second rainfall begins, at which time the presumption is that if the olives stay on the tree after the time that the second rain begins falling, then they're going to spoil. So that rather than let them spoil, at this point, you know, they're free for all, everybody can come and take them. Okay? My namushos. Now, what do we mean by the word namushos? So Omar, which we you know, we said I had translated being like elderly people, but they'll give it an interpretation now. My nemushas, what do we mean by nemushas? So Omar Rabbi Yochanan, sobe da azliat tigra. He says these are elderly people who have to walk upon a cane. In other words, they need a cane in order to walk with. They cannot go on their own 2 feet. So they have to get a priority before you know, the people can then come and harvest whatever is left over there. Reish Lakish Omar, Lukute Bosa Lukute. He says the Namushos, that means those who are gathering after the first gatherers have gone. In other words, first they gather, then another group comes in to gather, and by that time, after that, then you're free to go after two other groups have gone. This is how he explains the word the Bushmas.
What does Reish Lakish mean?
Reish Lakish is Shimon ben Lakish.
Okay,
yeah,
I heard that.
But they called him Reish Lakish because of the fact that he was literally a head of people. Now, what do I mean by a head? He's a very important person. No, he's a very important person. But there's a very famous Gemara that says something about Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, to begin with, was a bandit, actually. He was a real bandit, yeah. And then Rabbi Yochanan converted him. He got him to become religious. Right. And Reish Lakish said he would do it on condition that he married Rabbi Yochanan's daughter. So Rabbi Yochanan consented to that. And Reish Lakish changed his entire way of life and became a Baal Tshuva and became a great scholar. So then the Gemara says that one time he complained to Rabbi Yochanan. He said, look, when I was the head of a gang, the chief of the gangsters, you know, so they called me Reisha, they called me the head. Yeah. And now that I'm a scholar, he says, they still give me the title the head. So what have I gained, you know, by becoming the head of scholars as compared to the head of gangsters? Of course, he didn't mean it seriously, but no. The point is,
what did Rabbi Yochanan answer? Yeah.
Didn't give him an answer. It was obvious that his new way of life was better. Besides, Rabbi Yochanan said, look, you got my daughter. That's the difference.
I heard that name
before. Rabbi, Rabbi.
Yeah. No, he's quoted loads of times in the Gemara. Right, Reish Lakish. Yeah, very famous. Right. But his real name was Shimon. Shimon ben Lakish.
Shimon ben Lakish.
Right, yeah. So Reish Lakish Omar, yeah, Lukuti Basa Lukuti. Rapapa Omar. Papa said, "Kidei lahaleich b'shvilei harishus." He says, "When the second rain comes, this is the time when you have permission to now walk in private paths." The Omamar, as you know, a scholar said, "Mahalchin kol odom b'shvilei harishus," that people are permitted to walk in the private paths until the time the second rain falls. Let me explain that. I didn't quite explain it correctly. Again, he wants to know what is the second rainfall, you know, what is the purpose of it? And we saw different suggestions as to what it is. For Nedorim, right? or to give us a certain time, let's say, for the gathering of olives, at which point can everybody come into the field and start to pick olives, because otherwise it would spoil.
Wow.
So he gives another one. Normally, people can walk, let's say, if it's the summertime, okay? So you would be permitted to walk on private paths that are between, you know, where it's surrounded by beds of produce and things like that, okay? But once the second rain starts, it's going to fructify the seeds that have been planted in the ground, because the rain will make it fruitful, you know, for the future. But what happens if you go and you trample upon it because there are seeds underneath? Then you'll ruin it. So that there won't be. So that, therefore, this is the time, he says, that you're no longer permitted to go in private paths, but you have to stick instead to the public ways. Okay?
Which is called...
Right. Yeah. If you want, you know, the... call it the Rishus HaRab.
Rishus HaRab.
Right. Public domain. Rav Nachman by Yitzchok, Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Omar, he says... that the purpose of the second rain is levayer peiro shavis. It's in order to tell us that you have to remove the fruits that have grown, you know, during the seventh year from your home. Ditnan, as we learned, ad mosai nen in v'sofin b'tevin v'kashol shavis. Until what point can we can we have use and burn the straw and the stubble that grows in the seventh year? Remember what I said before about aftergrowth and so on. In other words, it's not just fruit and grain and so on that are affected, but even anything that grows in the ground, you're not allowed to use it for private purposes. That's the point. So even to burn it in order, let's say, to have like kindling or something like that, you're not allowed to do it,
that.
Right? So the answer is, you know, archetery of the Shania, until the point that you know, the second rain falls. My Tama, what is the reason? It's written in the Torah, it is to be for your cattle, and for your untamed bees, your, you know, not domesticated bees, asher be'artzecha, there are in your land. Kol zman shechayo cheles pasodeh, as long as the wild beasts find food to eat in the field, then you can also give it to your cattle. In other words, you can feed them from what you have in your home. But from the point that the wild animals no longer have any food that they could find in plenty, then you have to take out the food from your house that you stored up so that your cattle can enjoy. In other words, you can no longer you know, keep it in the house, but you have to give it to them so that they also have something to eat. Well, I'll do a couple of more lines and we'll call it a day, because my throat is very tired tonight. Says my Loshon Revi'ah, what is the meaning of the word Revi'ah? So he answers, Dover Sharovea es Hakarka. It is something which, I'll explain it to you, it is Rovea the soil. Alright, now the question is, what does Rovea mean? The answer is that the word Rovea in Hebrew implies like sexual intercourse. But let me explain. We have it, for example, you know, where we have it in Sefer Vayikra, among prohibited things, that you're not allowed, for example, to have intercourse with an animal, you know, what they call bestiality, okay? And the expression is leriva, tevelhu. This is, you know, it's an abomination, so on, okay? So the rain, it's as though it is performing the act of, let's say, a husband to the soil, which is like the wife. You understand? This is what and that's why it is called Revi'a. Mm-hmm. Okay? Get a Rav Yehuda, as Rav Yehuda said, Amar Rav Yehuda, he says, Nitra, the rain, he says, is Balo de Arahu, is the husband of the soil. Shenemar, and the pasuk that he bases it upon is the fact, it's a pasuk in Yeshayahu. Ki kasher yered hageshem asher ben shamayim. Because just as the rain and the snow descend from heaven, the shomalo yeshuv, and they will not return over there, kiyim hirva es horas, except that they saturate the earth, the holy da, and they cause it to give birth, the hitzmicho, and you know, and to bring forth all kinds of plants. So, in other words, the soil benefits from the rain just as a wife, you know, benefits from her husband. And this is why it's called Revia, that it is holy dor, the hitzmicho. It causes the earth, literally, to bear its produce, right, and bring forth the vegetation. The Yomar Rabbi Abohu said, Revia Rishona, what is the first rain there for? It's Kadesh Atevet Bekharka Tefach. It's in order to moisten and to enter the soil a tefach. A tefach is a hand's breadth. In other words, the first rain will produce a certain amount of saturation, but, you know, not complete, only, let's say, about a hand breadth of rain. Sheniyo, but the second one is kedelo guf bo pi chovitz. It's in order to, you know, to moisten the soil to such an extent that, for example, you could take the soil and use it in order to take a cask and make a stopper for it. In those days, how did they seal a cask?
Use a corn cob.
Huh?
A corn cob.
Corn cob. No, they didn't use corn cobs for that. They sealed casks by sort of like putting mud and then baking it on. But naturally, the mud has to have, you know, a certain hardness, a certain consistency. Because if it's simply slime, you know, it's garnished, right? But we're talking about so that the rain at this point has affected the soil in such a way that they could use it in order to stop up the cask of wine so that there shouldn't be any evaporation. So, anyway, yes, Rav Chisda said, Gishomim, if the rain, Sheyordo, has fallen, Kedelo Gufa and Pichovis, so that you could use the soil in order to stop up, you know, the mouth of a cask, so Ein Bohen Mishum VeOtzar. Then it means that God has blessed the land with enough rain so that it no longer, the idea of Yotzar HaShemayim, you know, when the Pasuk says that God will shut up the heaven, there will no below Yemotor, this is no longer in effect. In other words, it shows that God has blessed us by giving us enough rain. Well, I think I'm going to stop at this point.
Okay.
And Yotzar Hashem, we shall continue. We've covered quite a bit of ground tonight.
Oh,
we're now on Dav Vav Amud Beis. Approximately in the middle of the page right there.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Are you milking or fleishig?
I'm parv. I mean fleishig. What am I talking about?
Fleishig.
What is this? This huh? It is parv.
No sugar in
there. No, there's definitely sugar.
Because
there is sugar in this.
Oh, yeah, of course there is, but because it won't. You know, it's not going to spoil.
These are kosher candies, but they're
small.
I've
milked
that
before. Thank you very much.
It's parv.
Very good. Okay, so Mir Sashem, we shall meet next week and continue, and we're moving along. We're going very nicely.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are now on where?
We are now on Davod, Amud Beis.
Amud Beis, okay.
The fourth long line on the page.
Fourth line?
Three. Long line.
Long line.
Long line,
okay.
On the page. Okay?
Yep.
All right. Second word. The Yomar Rabbi Abohu, we did these couple of words last week at the very end, but I'm reviewing it simply because of the fact that it ties in, you know, with the Father. So, the Yomar Rabbi Abohu, so Rabbi Abohu said, Revia Rishona, remember we learned that there were three rain falls in Eretz Israel, okay? First rain, which they call over here the Revia Rishona, then there's Revia Shnia, which comes just a few days later, okay? And then via Shlishis, okay? So these three rains, we learned at the top of the page, on the, the bottom of the previous page, why these three reigns. Now, by the way, we're still talking, you know, about the Yorah. We're not talking about the Malkosh over here, okay? Mm. Because we're talking primarily about the reigns that fall in the month of Cheshvan and maybe up to the beginning of Kislev or so, okay?
Spring reigns.
Huh?
Spring reigns.
No, these are really the fall reigns.
Really fall
reigns. Spring reigns are the different. That's the Malkosh.
Malkosh, okay.
Right. Although there are differences of opinion, but that's generally what the discussion led to last time, okay? But there are three periods of rain, even in the former rain. In other words, it's usually like a little break, and then another rain comes, and then a break, and then another rain comes, okay? Mm-hmm. So the question is, what is the purpose of the first rain? What is the purpose of the second rain? Okay? And the third rain, we know. The third rain, obviously, it's the, you know, to increase the fertility, etc., etc. The second rain? The second rain is in reference to vows we learned. This is what we learned at the top of the page. If you take a vow, for example, that you're not going to eat this and this food until until rains fall, then since Geshomim is plural, so it's not up to
rain.
The first rain, but it's up to the time when the second rain begins, at which time you're automatically freed from the vow. Okay? And then we learned also that there's another possibility, namely that after the second rain, things are going to begin spoiling in the fields, and so we learned that in connection with like leket, peyah, shekha, and things like that, or with olives, that they're permitted already to anybody could go into the fields and pick, lest they rot away in the fields over there. So it becomes free for all at that particular point. Okay? All right. So going down now to where we are, we learned that Omer Rabbo, Rabbo has said that Revi'a Rishona, what is the purpose of the first rain? So he said, Kedei Shetered B'Tarka Tepa. It's in order that it should go into the ground the measure of a Tepa. Tepa is a hand breadth. So in other words, it gives a soaking to, okay, you know, the first few inches of the ground. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says,
yeah.
Let's see, where's the place? It's on the mirror. Yeah.
Okay.
And
the second one.
Right, yeah. What's the second one? He says, Kedei Laguf for Pikovis. Remember that you can make enough mud out of it, so to speak, that when it hardens, it forms like a stopper for a cask. Cask that contains wine or oil or something like that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Omarat Chisa. In other words, prior to that, it doesn't have enough consistency. But now it has enough consistency, but presumably too, because of the consistency, it indicates that the ground has been soaked even more and it's ready, it can hold the water, you see.
Okay.
So they made casks for wine there? Is that what they made the casks for?
No, but they made
stoppers.
Oh, stoppers.
Just to put a like
a
cork.
A cork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except that they didn't use a cork. So they used this in order to seal it, so
seal
to speak,
it.
Until they had a breakthrough in order to,
like
you know, to get out of the
right. Seal with wax or something
yes,
like that.
Yes,
yeah,
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, and then Omer Rav Chisda, and Rav Chisda said that Yishamim sheyodah kedei loga behem pichovit same behem yishamotah. He says that if it has rained enough, hard enough, so that you could use now the soil, you know, which is moisture soaked by the rain, in order to seal up the cask, as we have said, then it means that we no longer have to worry about the curse that we have in the Shema Yisrael, where it says V'yotzo to Shemayim, that you know if the people of Israel sin, right, the Korach Ad Hashem Lachem, right, V'yotzo to Shemayim, and God will become angry with you, and He will shut up the heaven, V'lo Yemoto, and there will not be any rain.
Second paragraph.
Right. So the result is that if we see that it's wet enough, then we know that we don't have to fear that God is going to shut up the rain, right? That there'll be it's already providing a sufficient rainfall
right.
for the year. Okay. Omar Abaye, Omer Rav Chista. Okay. Right. Another statement that he made was that Kishon Mishayodu Kodem the Otsar, Ein Bohem Mishum the Otsar. He says that if it rains before you get to saying the second paragraph of the Shema, then again you don't have to worry that the curse of the Otsar Sashamayim will be carried out.
I understand what he means by that.
Okay, what he means is you're saying Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay? And all of a sudden, before you get to that point in the second paragraph of the Krishna, you know, where it says, what's our Shemayim? You see that it's raining, so that's a simon already that there will not be a curse. However, as we'll see, there's a question now that they raise. Abaye, Omar Abaye, so Abaye said, Le'am Moron, he says, Elo Kodem V'yotzad Urta. He says, this applies only if we're reading the evening Krishna. In other words, if rain starts to fall in the evening, then that's a good sign. That's a sign that, you know, there will not be any scarcity of rain. Aval kodem v'yotzad tzafro, but if the rain begins falling before the shachris Krishna, before we say v'otzar in the morning, in shachris, so yesh b'hem mishum v'otzar, then you can still have this possibility that,
the curse
of Otsar will be carried out. The Omar Rav Yehuda Bar Yitzchok, as Rav Yehuda Bar Yitzchok said, and this we had towards the last chapter of Brachas, where they quoted it also. It says, Hane Anone de Tzafro, Les Behu Mishosha. It says, if we see clouds in the morning, then they have no substance to them. So I explained to you, in Eretz Yisrael, very often you wake up and you see that the sky is cloudy. And then, and you think, oh, maybe we're going to see rain. Doesn't. As it gets sunny later in the day, so the clouds disappear. Mm. Then at nightfall, and again, clouds form. So that the result is that clouds in the morning do not necessarily indicate that there's going to be any rain. So this is what he's pointing out. And this is, and we have a pasuk to show this. The pasuk taken from the prophet Hosea, where he says, Mo'es elecho Ephraim, Mo'es elecho Yehuda. He says, what can I do unto you, O Ephraim? What can I do unto you, O Yehuda? Of course, Ephraim and Yehuda over here mean the two kingdoms of the Jewish people. Yeah. Because Hosea lived during the time when the nation of Israel, you know, was split into two different
kingdoms. There was a kingdom Yehuda, but was there a kingdom Ephraim too?
Oh, sure. What he calls Ephraim is what they call also Malchus Israel, Kingdom of Israel. And the capital from the time of King Omri on, who made the capital city of Shomron, that remained the capital of the Kingdom of Ephraim right until the time that the Assyrians, Asher, destroyed it and took captive the people of Israel.
The capital of Yehuda was then
Yerushalayim.
Right,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's northern capital and a southern capital, right, of Israel at one time?
Northern.
Well, Judah, you had a northern kingdom, you had a southern kingdom.
It was called Judah and Israel. Huh?
Judah and Israel, the two most common names, but very often the kingdom of Israel is referred to as also Ephraim.
Okay.
Because Ephraim was the principal tribe
of that area.
Made up that.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Was that the northern kingdom?
That was the northern kingdom.
Yeah. And prophets, Hosea happened to prophesy primarily to Ephraim, but also to Yehuda. Same thing with Amos. Amos also. He came from Yehuda, but he prophesied primarily in Ephraim and so on. So that they would go sort of back and forth, you know. And later, of course, once the kingdom of Israel was destroyed by the Assyrians, then all that you had left, of course, was the kingdom of Yehuda.
Now, the Assyrians, are they the same Assyrians, or is it a different tribe altogether?
The name Assyrian is, the Hebrew is Asher.
Asher.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's the name of the Syrians?
The name of the Syrians, which is a name that we do not find in our Bible, but in those days they were called Aram.
Aram Naharaim.
Actually, there were two areas of Aram. One is Aram Naharaim, the other one is called Aram Sodom.
But it was adjacent to Syria, huh? Assyria was adjacent Assyria?
No, Assyria was further away.
Was further away.
Further away, right. More to the northeast.
Where Iran is, or Iraq?
Well, Iraq is where...
Babel, yeah.
Babel was, exactly. Right. Iran is where Persia was.
Persia.
Okay. Assyria was sort of south of Persia.
Okay.
But it was one of the first world empires.
Very powerful tribe.
Right, right, yeah. Because Ashur, you know, had tremendous armies. And the result was that they conquered all that area. And then eventually they were conquered in turn by Babel, by Babylonia. And then, of course, after the 70 years or so, you know.
But Aram never was as big as those two.
No. No. But it was a powerful kingdom, too.
Yeah.
And at times.
But they did
they
not
would defeat the kingdom of Israel when battle was raging between the two. Sometimes they engaged in a union with Yisrael against Yehuda. This we find at the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu, where he has a prophecy saying that the king of Judah should not be afraid of the conspiracy between the king of Aram and the king of
Ephraim. Ephraim.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So,
I've always heard that word Assyria, you know, and I didn't
yeah,
know what
no,
that meant.
That's only because, you know, the names that we have are based, unfortunately, upon the Greek Bible, and as transmitted subsequently in the Latin Bible. So, if they didn't bother to call it Assyria, if they called it by its biblical name that we know it by Ashur, then in that particular case, you wouldn't have made the confusion between
that. Right.
And if they had called Aram Aram all the time, the way the Bible does, then again. But, you know, when you translate Aram and you translate it Assyria, so it gives a false concept. True.
Different that sounds, yeah.
You know, Assyria eventually became that part which belonged to Aram once upon a time. The capital of Aram was Damascus.
Yeah.
You know.
So when it says a wandering Aramean with my father, they were talking about Aram, Syria?
Yes. The only thing is that there are those who say that why do they call him Arami? Remember the reference is to Yaakov when it says. So the answer is because he had to flee there in order to escape the vengeance of his brother Esau. So he settled over there and he was there for 20 years, if you remember. So that's why it says Arami Obedovi. But of course, when it came to the time in the Medrash, so then they already give a new interpretation. They say Arami Obed means that Laban and Arami wanted to destroy Yaakov, you know, my people. So, but you know, there's a difference between what we call Pshat, meaning the
text.
Yeah, the most likely or the most simple explanation as compared to Drash, which means that you know, it's there for interpretation. Exactly. Alright, so getting back over here, so the Prophet Hosea says, what can I do unto you, Ephraim? What can I do unto you, Yehuda? Oh, what can I do for you, either one? The Chastachem Kanan Boker, inasmuch as your loving kindness literally is only like a morning cloud. In other words, the prophet is saying to both kingdoms that whatever good actions you do is only superficial and only lasts in the morning and dissipates afterwards. So therefore, on this basis, you see, so we see that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yitzchak said that you know, the morning clouds
really
do
don't
not
count.
Right, they don't mean very much. Omalei Rapapa Abaye. So Rapapa said to Abaye, he says, "Vaho Amrei Inche." Don't people say the following? You know, it's a proverbial expression. This we had also in Brachas, by the way. This little selection we had in the last chapter of Brachas. What do they say? He says, "Miftach Bove Mitra." If at the time that you open up the gates, there's rain. In other words, when you open the door, rain is falling. Bar Chamra, he says, then Mr. Donkey Driver, Buch Sakho, you might as well put down your bag, the Ghani, and go and take a nap again. Take it easy, because you're not going to go out and make any money, because
the rain is
going to bring prosperity to everyone, which means that the price of the food that you were going to carry excuse me, is going to go down, so it doesn't pay for you to go out of doors because you're only going to lose money as a result. I guess he might have answered that, yeah, but look at the turnover that the Gemara doesn't mention. Okay. All right, so what is the point of this? The point of this is simply the fact that, hey, if it rains in the morning, it could be a blessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here we said that if you see clouds in the morning or rain in the morning, it doesn't mean anything, right? So he says, Lokashri, he says, no, there's no difficulty between reconciling the two different examples. Ha de kotev yivo, ha de kotev anoni, says, if the cloud is, that is, if the sky is covered over with yivo, yivo is a thick cloud, then in that case, this would be a bracha. It's a bracha, because it means that it's going to be a good soaking rain, but ha de kotev anoni, if the sky is only clouded, is only covered over with light clouds, then it means that the rain isn't going to amount to anything.
So already we have a distinction for morning clouds.
Right.
Two different kinds of clouds.
Yes, exactly. Omar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said, Tova l'shata d'teva samalta. He says, it's good for the year. In other words, the year is going to be blessed when Teves is a widow. Now, what does it mean when Teves is a widow? So we have to understand. Remember that we had up above, also higher up on this page, they compare the rain that God sends, right, as if it were the bridegroom.
Yes.
Right?
And
the earth is like the collar, okay?
The collar, I think.
Right, all right. So if that's the case, what he's saying is that if the earth, the collar, okay, has no rain during Teves, that's good for the year. Why is it good for the year? Because it's rained prior to Teves. And then it gives an opportunity for, let's say, the seeds
to grow,
to grow, to germinate, to grow, and so forth. So that it means that it will bring on a year of plenty as a result. So now again, there's a question about that. Ikodi Amri, there are those who say, the lo bayere tarbitse, the Ikodi Amri le shakul shudofna. There are those who interpret it in the sense that the lo bayere tarbitse, which means that the fields will not go to waste. This, I have to tell you, is Rashi's second interpretation. We'll take a look at his two interpretations. The Ikodi Amri, and there are those who say, the lo shakul shudofna. Shudofna, shidofon in Hebrew, this they translate by blast, which means it's a disease that hits the plants and so on, okay? So the point
light,
is...
Light.
Okay, good.
Light.
Thanks, Oscar.
Yeah, all right. So if you have... I'm translating according to the old official translation that we find in the King James translation, you know, the word shidofon, right? Yeah, blast the mildew and so on, right? Okay, so the other interpretation is then that if the month of Teves is dry, it doesn't rain, then it also means then that this blight will not occur in the fields. The plants will not be affected. Okay? Eini? Isn't this so? The Omar Rav Chista, didn't Rav Chista say that Tova l'shata de Teves nivalto, that the year is fortunate in which Teves is going to be all dirtied up, all muddied up, so to speak. In other words, a rainy Teves, the implication would be that it would be good for the year. And here we said that a dry Teves is good for the year. So he says, Lokasha. No difficulty, he says. Ha de osamitra miyakara, ha de le osamitra miyakara. When is a dry Teves good? This is when rain has fallen to begin with. In other words, rain was there before the month of Teves. It was already raining. So in that case, it's good for the earth to have a chance to rest up a little bit and dry up a little in between. Okay? But where is the muddy Teves good? The answer is, if you didn't have rain beforehand, and it rains now, so at least you're getting rain. All right, I said that Rashi has two translations over here. He says Tova Lushat over there. He says Ashrei Klomer Tova Yesh Lashodo. The Teves Hamalto Shem Shem Yordan Ba Laharbiya. So it's to moisten the ground. He says Igad Elmi Doi Bayre Tabitze. This is the, you know, there are those who say that it is not Bayre Tabitze. Now Tabitze we know means fields or gardens or something like that. Okay, but. And the question is, what is the meaning of Bayre? So this is where Rashi gives two different interpretations. He says, Osan Mekomos. He says, those places, Shema Bitzimahen Torah, where they spread Torah over there, the Harbitz Torah became an expression, which means, you know, literally that you're cultivating Torah, all right? So, in those areas where they cultivate Torah, Einon Boros, then there are not going to be any pits in the ground, because that way the roads are good. And when the roads are good, because you know Tavis is dry, so then people can go from place to place and to learn Torah. This is his first interpretation. Then Lamed Aleph, which means Lishnach Rino, another interpretation. It says the Bayri Tabitze, he says Ganos. The gardens or the fields, she'inon gedelin, a row of mayim, that cannot produce great crops if there is too much water, because sometimes crops are affected by too much water. And he gives an example, Kagon Karshin, and he says, for example, rather, you know, so that therefore, if Tavis is dry, then that comes to say. And the other interpretation, Leshakel Shudofno, he says that it ain't Hashidavon Echaz Misnabik Betua. Says that the blast, the mildew, whatever you want to call it, the blight, will not take hold of the field if you have the proper amount of moisture. Okay. Or the proper amount of dryness. The Yomar Rav Chisda, another statement of Rav Chisda, he says, Geshomim sheyordu al nikze medino, the al nikze medino la yordu, says, if rain falls in some parts of a land, but not in other parts of the land, then ein bohem mishum ve'otzar, then this curse of the otzar, we don't have to worry about either, because at least part of the land is receiving rain. So this is question. Aini, is this so? Don't we have a contrary teaching? We have a pasuk. It's the famous pasuk at Amos. It says, "V'gam anochi montati mikemes hageshem v'yod shlosh hadoshim lakotziv." Bein Shalom says, of course, speaking to the prophet, "Behold, I have withheld from you the rain while there was still 3 months to go before the harvest season." The himtarti, and I brought rain afterwards. Now, the himtarti al ir achaz, and I caused it to rain upon one city. The al ir achaz le amtir, and upon another city, it did not. I did not bring rain. Chelko achaz temoter, right? One area or one field, if you wish, because chelko very often is the same as a field in the language of the Talmud.
Doesn't mean a portion?
Yeah, correct. Portion. But if you'll take a look, chelkas hasodeh. It's as though I explained to my kids, you know, when we read the book of Ruth, where the expression of chelkas hasodeh shel Elimelech, for example, the portion of the field literally belonging to Elimelech. Why did they use that expression? So, in my opinion, it's because they can see Hasodeh as meaning the entire expanse of ground. And then Chelko would mean what you personally own.
Yeah.
And the other, right, the other Chelko is what the other guy owns, and so on and so forth. Okay? So, Chelko Achaz Timoter, then upon one portion of the field, rain fell. Actually, it's a Nifal, which means, you know, it was rained upon, right? And then he says, "Yal chelko achas Loi tam tir alehem. And upon another one, I'm quoting from the from Amos, you know, Amos, from the, yeah. Nothing, right? So the point is then that Amos is presenting this not as a blessing that it rained upon one place but not on another, but he's presenting this that this was a punishment, that because God withheld the rain from the right area, the right time, so this was in the nature of a curse. So this contradicts the statement that Rav Chisda made, that if it rains upon one place and not upon another, then the curse of the Otsar is not going to be fulfilled. In other words, it's not that terrible. Okay. So, that being the case, Yom Rav Yehuda, Yom Rav, so Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav, Shtehen Niklola. Interpreting the verse of Amos, he says, both, the fact that it rained upon one and not upon the other, this is for a curse. So he says, Loi Kasha, says it's not a difficulty. Why? Hod Osa Tuvo, right? Where you have too much rain, Tuvo means a lot. Okay? Or as we would say, too much in this case. Okay? Where too much rain came, then this was what? It was a klala. But when it comes, even as it's necessary, even as it's proper, then in that case, of course, it is a blessing. So if you have the rain coming the way it's supposed to, even if it only rains here but not there, but it's still, it's a blessing. But if you have too much rain falling over here and nothing over there, then in that case, you know that it is, again, it's a klal. Omar Rav Ashi, Deikonami, he says, look carefully at the text. Dichsiv, it's written Timoter, which means literally it will be rained. Tehei Mokol Motor, Shmamina. And the meaning, the implication is that this has to be a place which has room for rain. Omer Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba said, Mei Mosai Mevochna Ad Shomim, says, when should we make the bracha for rain? So, again, this was quoted in the Gemara in Brachas in the last chapter. It says, you make the bracha, Mishayetze Chosan Nikras Kala, when the Chosan goes to meet the Kala. Now, what did we mean? So, we explained it at that time. We read it in the Rashi, if you remember then. And we saw that it meant that the Chosan is the rain. Right. And the Kala, of course, we said is the earth. But when the Kala receives so much rain that it begins to splash up again towards, so it's the Chosan coming to meet the Kala. So in other words, this is a good sign for rain, and therefore we should make a bracha thanking God for the rain. So my mevorech, what is the bracha that you make? So Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, he said the bracha is Modim Anachnu L'cho Ad Hashem Elokeinu Al Kol Tipo V'Tipo Shevadato Lonu. We thank God, thank you, O Lord our God, for every single drop of rain that you have brought unto us. Rabbi Yochanan, Messiah born, Rabbi Yochanan concluded the bracha, Hochi, in the following way. He said, Ilu fina moleshira kayom, ulshanenu rino kabon galov, etc. Which, of course, is what? If our mouths were filled with song, even as the ocean, right? And our tongues with singing, even as the multitude of its waves and so on. This is what we say in Ashrei, in Nishmas. And finally, Ad to this point, in other words, and the rest of that quotation that we are accustomed to saying in the Siddur, Ad Al Yazvunu Rachamecho Ad Hashem Elokeinu, okay, below Azvun, Ad El Yazvunu, Al Yazvunu, yes, and you know, where we say, and let not your mercies, O Lord our God, forsake us, and you have not, and they have not forsaken us. Baruch Rov HaHodavos. And we conclude the bracha, Baruch Atah Ad Hashem Rov HaHodavos. Okay? So now they say Rov HaHodavos, which means normally it would mean like for the multitude or for most of the thanksgivings. But the Gemara asked the question, Rova Hodawos, Hodawos, how come we thank God for the multitude, but meaning most of, and we don't thank Him for all the things for which we should be grateful? So I'm a Rava. So Rava says, okay, in that case, Emo El Hahodavos. Then end the bracha as Baruch Atah Hashem El Hahodavos. Right?
Yeah.
God to whom thanksgiving, you know, belongs.
Yeah.
So I'm a Rav Papa. So Rav Papa said, I'll tell you what. He says, Hilkoch. If that's the case, name me to the Tabaihu. Let's say both of them would say El Hahodavos for Rav Hahodavos. Okay? God to whom thanksgiving belongs, and also unto whom the multitude of thanksgiving belongs. Now, I just want to remind you, we did the Tosfos at that time in Brachas when we came across over there, and we saw that there was a suggestion made that Rav Hahodavos means also that God is like the Baal Hahodavos, so to speak. In other words, he is the one to whom all thanksgiving is due. At any rate, I wanted to tell you this. I had prepared a Eretz Yisrael Siddur, and at the last minute, I guess, something happened to change my mind that, I forgot to take it with me. In Eretz Yisrael Siddurim, you're going to find this blessing. You don't see it in Art School, I don't believe, because Art School is meant more for us over here in the diaspora than it is for Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So it was omitted to Matzro. Likewise, all the Siddurim that we have that are published for the Gola, so to speak. But if you have Siddurim that are printed for Eretz Yisrael, so many of them you'll find this particular bracha. I have two such Siddurim in the house, and they have the Nusach of the bracha over here, you know, exactly the way it says, you know, with Ilufil Mira, we thank you, O God, you know, I'll call Tipa V'Tipa Shavarato Lono, and you know, Ilufil Mola Shirakayom, etc., etc. And how does the bracha end over there? Baruch Ato Hashem, El, God, who is Rov HaHodolos. That's the ending of the bracha. So for an Eretz Yisrael, and we see the first substantial rainfall coming after a long drought, you know, it has been dry all that time, so this is the proper bracha to make. Now, in Eretz Yisrael Siddurim, you'll find also in the Shema Keleinu, they have a special prayer for Atziras Geshomim, when there is, you know, a scarcity of rain. Remember, the Atzira is the noun from the Otzaras HaShemayim. Right, and they added the Shema Keleinu. So you have that too, that during a time of the year where the rabbinate has decided that we've gone too long without any rain, so they add this to Shema Keleinu, that, a prayer for rain. Okay. Next week, Amir Hashem, I hope to bring in my sister so you can see for yourselves. Okay. Good evening, Stan. We're on the bottom of Vav on the day. We're finishing that.
No, we're in Zion.
Oh, we're already in Zion.
Zion.
I'm an olive.
Must have been carried away by the rain. I'm a Rav Avoh. And now we're going to have a series of statements speaking about how great is the rain, and also how great is the study of Torah, we'll see as we go along. Okay, the first rain. Why? I just want to remind you, where do we insert Masha Baruah?
Speaks before Machal Tirchaim.
Yes, and what do we call that second blessing? We call it the Gevuras, or Mechaya HaMeisim.
Okay? Yeah, the rising of the
but,
dead.
Yeah, we call it. Technically, the name is Gevuras, meaning you know, I thought you brought the Yom Hashem, and so God's Gevurah. So Omar Abba Bohu said, Godol Yom Hakshomi Mitchias HaMeisim. He says that the day when rain falls is even greater than the day when the Techias HaMeisim, the restoration to life of the dead, is going to take place. The Yilu, why? Yilu Techias HaMeisim and Tzadikim. The revival of the dead will be for the righteous. The Yilu Geshomim, but the rain?
Bain.
This is Bain Letzadikim and Bain Lerishoyim. No, Bain means it makes no difference.
Bain.
Whether for the Tzadikim or for the Rishoyim. It falls upon them all. It benefits everyone. So that therefore this has to be greater, according to Rav Lo's Drash. The Flieger of Rav Yosef, and he's in disagreement with Rav Yosef. The Omer Rav Yosef, who said, Mitok Shehisha Kulor Kitkiyas HaMesim, inasmuch as the rain is equated, you know, it's held to be, a similar greatness of God, even as the revival of the dead. That's why they put it into the bracha of Techiyas HaMeisim, Mechaya HaMeisim. Okay? So, according to the second opinion, namely, you know, Rav Yosef, who said that the two are equal in God's greatness, both the Chiyas and Mesa and also the Shomet. But this is in disagreement with whom? With Rabbo, who said that rain is even greater, a greater miracle on the part of God. Omar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said, God Ol Yomach Shomim, he says that the day when rain falls is Kiyom Shenitam Beitera, it's like the day upon which the Torah was given to the people. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, is of course in Parsha HaDinu, beginning over there. It says, Ya'arov kamoto likhi, let my likhi, lekach, you know, what does lekach mean? Here it doesn't mean cake. Lekach means, of course, my teaching. So God says, let my teaching, you know, like in kilekach of the sati, yeah, it's the same word, okay? So let my teaching fall like the rain, okay? V'yein lekach ala Torah. And as he says, you know, lekach refers to Torah, God's teaching. Shadevar ki lekach tov v'tzati nochem. I have given you good teaching, and what is it? Torosi al ta'adolu, do not forsake my Torah. Rav Omar, Rav said, hey, what do you mean? It's only like, it says, Yosef miyam shenitam b'kerem. It's even a greater miracle than the day that when the Torah was given. Shadevar, because it's written, first of all, Yarov kamoto likhi, right? Let my teaching, he says, drop like the rain. He says, Ninis lo b'mi. Tell me, when you make a comparison, who do you make the comparison with? Ever yomer, you have to say, Koton is the begono. That when you say, blank is like blank, right? So we're saying that blank is inferior to the second blank, because the second blank is the stronger thing, and we're comparing one to the other. So that therefore he says, if that's the case, if it says Yarov Kamotor Likhi, that it should be like rain, then in that case rain is the important part of the figure of speech, right? And God's teaching, in other words, the Torah, this should only fall like the rain, or something like that. So it's dependent upon it. We use the word nisbo today, which meant from originally hanging, but we use it in the sense of dependent in modern Hebrew, and we see, I mean, here's exactly what it means. Rava, Rome. Rava pointed out a contradiction. What? Kisiv yarev kamote likhi, v'chsiv tizal katalim rosa. The same pasuk says, not only yarev kamote likhi, let my teaching, he says, fall like the rain, but it's written immediately afterwards, Tizal Katalim Rasi, let my word be distilled like the dew. So he says, In Talmud Ochem Hogun Hu Katal, Yim Lav or Fehu Kabot. And he gives the following drush. He says, if the Talmud Ochem is a worthwhile person, in other words, he's 100% in his convictions, and what he says is what he is, then in that case, let it be distilled like the dew. In other words, just as the dew comes gently and benefits mankind, so likewise his teachings also, by their gentleness, you know, they benefit mankind. The im lav, but if not, he says, or fehu kamoter, then let it literally kill him, even like the rain. In other words, let him be like being swept away by the rain. He's making, of course, a play on words, as you realize. The word over there, where it says Yarov Kamoto Likhi, so there it means that, you know, the rain comes down, you know, and therefore he compares the God's teachings, you know, to the rain falling upon. But where it says Orfehu, what he has in mind is, for example, we have like for the story in Sefer Devarim about the Egla Arufa. Remember the Egla Arufa? If they find, for example, a corpse, they don't know what happened.
Which town it belongs
to. Right, which town, where was the murder committed, and so on. So they have to come and they have to measure. And then what do? They have a sacrifice rite of the eglot, in other words, the heifer, which is, how do they slaughter it? They don't slaughter it the usual way, but instead they break its neck. So that's the arufa. So, the word oref in Hebrew is this back of the neck over here, okay? So, he's making a play on words then. In other words then, if he's not worthy, then let him be swept away by the rain so that his teachings do not corrupt other people. This is the idea. Tanya, we learn. Oy Rabbano, Emir Rabbano, it used to say, he says, Koloesik Patero Lishma, whoever studies Torah for its own sake, then Terosu Nasis Lo Sadchaim, then his Torah becomes for him like an elixir of life. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Eitz Chaim Hi, Samachazikim Bo, it is a tree of life to those who hold fast to it. The Omer, and another Pasuk over there, as in the book of Proverbs says, Rifu is Tehili Sharefa. It will be healing literally unto your navel, unto your belly, but it means that you will be healed by the words of Torah. The Omer, another pasuk over there, also says, Ki Motza'i Motza Chaim, right? Because he who finds me, in other words, who finds, Torah, he has found life. He has found the secret of life. Okay? But what if you study Torah not for the sake of studying Torah, but for some ulterior motive? Then in that case, it's going to turn into him as an elixir of death.
Well, what would be an ulterior motive, for example?
An ulterior motive? Yeah. Simply in order to become rich or something like that. Or to get a good job or something that will pay him well or something like that. Yeah. Or that everybody will admire him and say, oh, what a great guy this guy is. In other words, when you study, it should be really lishmo. It should be for the sake of learning Torah, because of the love of Torah and the fact that you want to make it part of your life.
Right.
This is the attitude with which we should be studying. I don't say, we know that
some people
there are other opinions too. Right. As for example, the famous statement that we have, mitoch shalo lishmo, bo lishmo. That when a person begins studying Torah with ulterior motives, but eventually our prayer is that he will come to do it for the right purpose, for the lishmo, for the sake of Torah itself. And just as before, we said, that only the tzaddikim are going to have tchiyas ha'mesim and the rishayim are not going to have it. But nevertheless, our sages said that there is a period whereby everybody could go through a process of purification, and that lasts no more than Yud Beis Chodesh. So, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, only a very few by name, are excluded from Olam Haba. But everybody else will get into Olam Haba. If they're tzaddikim, then they'll get in there immediately. They have a passport there, okay? If they're not sure tzaddikim, but they have merit to them, so it'll take a little bit longer until the merits get out of the system and the merits take over.
It sounds green.
Right. And incidentally, this is why we say Kaddish only for 11 months, because we say we don't want to say that they're 100% tzaddikim. Nobody knows that they are, right? We don't want to say that they're Rishoyim either, because the punishment of Rishoyim lasts for 12 months. So this is the reason why we stop at the beginning of the 12th month. Just
I thought it was because we wanted to confuse the Sutton.
No, not in this case. Okay. But that's the origin of the idea. As it's some harmonish, we have come out of the right? What did I do? Skip something?
No.
Just it's a little further on. It gets a little confusing. We find the same thing over and over again. The Ein Arif El Harigo. What happened? Right. Okay, but right, Shanemar, as is written, Yarev Kamoto Lichi. All right, so I'm on the right track. That let the rain fall. I mean, let my teaching fall like rain. The Ein Arifa El Hariga, right. And Arifa refers to killing. Shenema V'yofu Shomes V'egla Banochel, that they are to kill there the heifer in this valley. Omale Rabbi Yirmiyel Rav Zera. So Rabbi Yirmiyel said to Rav Zera, Leisei Mar, listening. He says, come, O my master, give us a good vault. Listen.
Right, a good vault.
Right, give us a good vault. So Omale, so he said to him, Cholash Libi V'lo Yechid, and he says, you know, I'm not feeling good, so I'm not able to. So he said, blame my mom. So he says, in that case, I'll tell you what. Tell us something agoda. Don't give us a halachish moves this time. Give us agoda. Usually, you know, agoda is a little bit lighter in character and so on. So it won't be such a strain upon
you. This
is
in the middle of studying Torah, right?
Right, right. So Amalei, so he said to him, okay, I'll give you a little agoda. Says, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said as follows. He says, "My dirsif, what is the meaning of the pasuk where it says, ki ho'odo me'tzasode, is man then like the tree of the field? V'chi ho'odo me'tzasode, who? Tell me, does it mean that the man is like a tree in the field? Elo, but what is the implication? Mishum dirsif, since we have another pasuk that says, ki memen, well actually it's a continuation of the same pasuk, ki memenu tochel, the yosodo sichros, that, you know, you can eat from it, and you did not cut it down. Lachasiv, and then afterwards again, still referring to the tree, it says Osa Sashris Vicharoto, you can destroy it and cut it down. By the way, over there in the Torah, what it says over there, if you remember, is that if it is Eitzbachol, if it is a tree which bears fruit that can be eaten, right, then in that case you're not allowed to destroy it. But if you know that it is Eitz, you know, that is a tree that bears no fruit, right? So that also sashchis v'charot, that you're permitted to destroy. So he says, what is the drash? What are the implications? So a man, an Eitz Chaim, right? The tree of life, Torah, correct? Mm-hmm. So this is the implication, says Hoketza. He says, im talmid chochem hogen hu, if he is taka, you know, a worthy Talmud Chacham, then mimenu tochel, then from him you may eat v'yoso lo sichros, and you're not allowed to cut him down. In other words, you have to show respect and you have to listen to his teaching and benefit by them. V'yim lav, but if not, then in that case, if he's not a worthy Talmud Chacham, then oisit sashchis v'charata, then you are to destroy him and cut him down. Okay, look. There are scholars in the Reform, there are scholars among the conservative, right? But not everything, because they possess scholarship, doesn't mean that it's going to benefit, you know, Yiddishkeit.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's the same idea, that if it's a Talmud Chacham Hogan, in other words, he's preaching Taka, traditional Torah, and traditional practices and so on, then in that case, be menu tochal. You should eat from him, learn from him, enjoy his teachings and so on. But if he's telling you to do the wrong thing, then even though he is a Talmud Chacham, but if he's not Hogel, if he's not right, he's giving you the wrong steer, you know, then in that case, that's a shashish before. Don't listen, don't pay any attention to him. Omar al-Khomo, the Rebbe, as it says on the side note over there, from the son of Rebbe, he says, the Rebbe Chanino is the son of Rebbe Chanino. He says, "My dirsif, what is the meaning of the pasuk where it says, Barzel, the Barzel Yechad, that iron sharpens iron?" It's also in Proverbs. So he says, "Lo malucho, this is the teachers. Ma Barzel ze, Echad bechadir eskavero, just as in the case of iron, one piece of iron can sharpen another one. So Ashnei Tamidei Chachomim, so likewise two Tamidei Chachomim Mechadadin Ze B'Halacha, they sharpen each other in Halacha. When you have two, they have discussions and everything else, so then they keep each one sharp, so that, you know, they're up to date, so to speak, and they're learning and they know how to apply the learning because of the result of the discussion between them, and by their reasoning together, this sharpens them both. Omar Rabba Bachono, Rabba Bachono said, Lomo nimshalu de Torah ke'esh. Why are the words of Torah compared to fire? Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Yom Yohu, Alo kol devori ke'esh liyum Hashem. Surely, my word is even like a fire, saith the Lord. So Lomo lecho is to teach you that ma'esh eino doda kechidi. Just as fire cannot light when it's all by itself, if fire is isolated, it's not in contact with anything else, then in that case it cannot ignite anything else. So after a Torah, emes kaimim yichidi. So likewise, the words of Torah cannot remain permanent in someone who is only learning by himself, only by himself, only alone. V'hayne d'omar Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina. And this reaffirms the teaching of Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina, who said, "By the Sif Chervel Abadi v'Noalu." It's a pasuk in Yom Yohu again. It says, "A sword unto the," literally that means the boastless v'Noalu, and they shall be made foolish. But he gives a tight, you know, Chervel Sonein Shal Tamini Chachomim. He says, "A sword upon thee." Now, it doesn't mean enemies to Talmidei Chachamim, but it means a sword upon those Talmidei Chachamim. It's similar to an expression that we find again and again. So, Nehem Shal Yisrael, meaning not the enemies of the Jewish people, but the Jewish people themselves, who are their own enemies, so to speak. You understand? Mm-hmm. And what they do. So, he says, a sword upon those Talmidei Chachamim, She'oskin Bad Bevad B'Torah, who study all by themselves, all alone in Torah. Right? In other words, instead of going and sharing what they have with others, whereby they would benefit themselves by sharpening with the other, and the others benefit them by sharing Torah with them, right? And what's going to happen to the one who studies simply by himself and alone? Furthermore, he says, Elishim Atapshim. They're going to turn foolish. In other words, they're going to become forgetful of their Torah and forget, you know, what they've learned if they don't have a chance to exercise it with others. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, with Awadu, they become foolish. Below old, and not only that, Ela Shechotin. It's not just that they forget, but actually they're going to sin. Ksiv Hocha bin Awadu. Here it says, with Awadu, and they return foolish, right? Ksiv Hosom. And there it says, and this is in connection, if you remember, when Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And then Miriam was afflicted with leprosy. So Aaron prayed to Moses and said, please pray to God for her. And he says, you know, Al no soshes aleinu chatosh, please do not bear sin against us, asher noalnu, because we have acted foolishly, va'asher chatonu, we've also sinned. So that, you know, a Talmud Chochem then who becomes foolish because he does not share his Chochmah with others. Not only that, but he's also, he's sinning in doing so. It's not enough that the Yiboy say more, and if you wish, Mehocha. The fact that foolishness, you know, is implied in the word Noalu, because the Pasuk says in Yeshayahu, it says Noalu Sari Tzon. The princes of Tzon, meaning the princes of Egypt, are made foolish. The Hisu es Mitzrayim, and the result is that they have made their fellow Egyptians err. Omer Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, Loma nimshalu levei Torah ke'eitz. Why are the words of Torah compared to a tree? Shenemar eitz chayim mil matzikim bo. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a tree of life to those who grasp it. Loma lecho, ma eitz koton, just as a small tree, madlik es hagodol. In other words, all you have to do is to take like a small match made of wood, right? And what could it do? Could burn a tree. Or let's say you had, piece of wood, a sliver of wood. Okay? The word eitz in Hebrew means wood, and it means tree. It means both. So, this is the implication then. Just a small piece of wood can cause a big tree to catch on fire, right? So, so av tamidei chachomim ketanim b'chamim b'sagdolim. So likewise, the smaller or the younger Talmidei Chachamim sharpen the great ones or the older ones. In other words, when you come in contact with students, or when you come in contact with even those who do not have the same amount of learning as you, but by virtue of the fact that you have discussions, you have questions and answers, and everybody is eager to learn one from another, so in that case, the older ones, the greater ones, they benefit from the younger ones, even as the younger benefit from the older ones. And this is what Rabbi Chanina said when he said, "Harbe lo malati mi rabbis." He says, "I have learned many things from my teachers, mechaverai yosef mi rabbisai, and from my own colleagues, those who sit down and learn together with me. From my colleagues, I have learned even more than what I learned from my teachers. Metalmidai yosef mi kulam, and from my pupils, I have learned more than all of them."
Isn't that written in Shabbos? They say it that way.
No, it happens to be a Gemara in Marcus, but it's a very beautiful, it's a very famous statement.
I mean, isn't it said that he learns from his pupils? They asked this rabbi how he was so smart, and he says he learned from his pupils.
Yeah, but where does it say that in Shabbos?
Not Shabbos.
In Perik.
Right. It's not quoted over there the way it's quoted over here.
Right. Line about the teachers.
Right.
I mean about the colleagues.
Right. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, Rami. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa posed a contradiction between two psukim. Ksiv, it's written, for example, the grass tzomei heshayil moyim, which means bring water to one who is thirsty. Uksiv, and then another pasuk, both of them in Yeshayahu, by the way, says hoi kol tzomei l'chulamayin. Ho, everyone who is thirsty, go into the water. So why in one case does it say bring water and the other one says go and get water for yourself, right? So he says im talmid hogun hu, then the kras some hesoyavay. If he is a worthy talmid chacham, then in that case let him bring water, you know, to everyone who is thirsty, right? Thirsty for knowledge. The ye lo, but if he's not worthy, then in that case hoy kol some lekolamayim, then let everyone go and get the water of Torah for himself. Rabbi Chanina bar Choma, Rami. He also found, you know, a contradiction between two psukim. It's written in the book of Mishlei, book of Proverbs, Ksiv yafutzu mayon asecha chutza, which means let your streams spread out. Uchsiv, in another part he says, yulechol avadecha, let them be for you alone. So how come? So he says, im talmid hogam hu, if he is a talmid hogun, as we said, then in that case, yafutzu anesu chutza, then by all means, spread your teaching, spread your springs, your well springs, you know, out. Let them go as far as you can, you know, to bring the waters of Torah everywhere. Be im lav, but if you're not worthy, then in that case, yulechol avadecha, keep it to yourself, and don't go spreading it to others. Omar Rabbi Chanina Baridi says, "Loma nimshalu divrei Torah l'mayim." Why are the words of Torah compared to water? Dichsiv, as the pasuk says in Yeshayahu, says, "Hoy kol tzomei l'chulamayim." Right, everyone who is thirsty, go to the water. Loma l'cho, to tell you, "Ma mayim manichim mokim gavoyah v'hochul mokim normal." Just as water leaves a higher elevation and goes to a lower elevation, so af divrei Torah. So likewise, the words of Torah in Miskaimin can only be preserved well, elabamisha dato shefolo, in someone who is humble in spirit. In other words, if a person has a swelled head and thinks that he's the greatest thing in the whole world, then in that particular case, the Torah is not going to stay over there. But if a person is humble, then Torah is going to stay over there, just as water goes down,
seeks its level,
goes down, yeah. Okay, yeah. To that which is the humblest. The Omer Rabbi Shaya said, "Loma nimshalu divrei Torah l'shlosha mashkin halolu." He says, "Why is the Torah compared to these three different liquids? B'mayim, water; uviyayin, wine; uvecholov, and milk." Why these three? says Nitziv, because they're all combined in the same pasuk. Again, in Shayo, the same passage over there, where it says, Hoy kol tzomei l'chulam hayim, right? Nitziv, and right after that it's written, L'chu shivru ve'echolu, go, acquire food and eat, L'chu shivru, and go and acquire it below kesef or below bechir, without paying anything for it. Yayin, wine, the cholov, and milk. So in other words, we see mayim, yayin, and cholov. So why these three in that pasuk in Yeshayahu? So he says, lo malacha is to teach you, mash loisha mashkin halolu, in miskayim in mele befocho shabakelim, just as these three are best preserved, or can only be preserved in the lowest type of vessels, lowest type of, you know, jars, jugs, etc. So after Torah, so the words of Torah also in this kaimim el mishadatoshvot. The words of Torah are best preserved where a person is humble. Kida Amrlei, and we have a famous little story over here. Kida Amrlei Barte de Kesar, even as the daughter of the Caesar said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, she said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, she said, how come that such glorious Torah is to be found in such an ugly vessel? You have to understand, he was a great Talmud Chacham. Not only that, but he was on very close terms with the Roman royalty, with the emperor, with the Caesar, okay? Right. We have many stories told, you know, various places in Talmud, Midrashim, and so on, about how the Caesar, you know, would ask different questions of Rabbi Chanin, and Rabbi Chanin would explain it to them. So, but nevertheless, he was not a very handsome person. So, the daughter of the king, daughter of the Caesar, said unto him, how come that such an ugly vessel has such glorious wisdom? So,
that means he couldn't have been in the Sanhedrin if he was ugly, because you have to be handsome and respectable to look
at. All right.
Really, isn't that one of the, you've got to be someone who's not repulsive, that you have to be a good stature?
Okay.
Really?
Okay, so let me tell you something. Okay. What the daughter of Caesar looks repulsive, to another person, it looks like an ordinary person. Right. You understand?
Yeah.
I mean, how many girls think that Chavez, Robert Redford, is the acme of manliness or something like that? You understand? Mm-hmm. I mean, they look to movie stars in order to measure up to them. Or television stars. That shows how benighted I am. But I put movies ahead of televisions.
Right.
But, you know, if it doesn't measure up to a certain preconceived notion that they have, so then nothing, understand? So this is really the implication. I don't mean that he was so ugly that he was, a dwarf or something like that. No, we don't have any indication.
Oh, he wasn't deformed or anything like that.
He wasn't like Quasimodo.
No. Right, right. But he wasn't handsome according to her. So he said to her, Omalo. So he said to her, tell me, he says, Avicha Rami Chamra B'mani B'pachra? Tell me, your father, does he throw his wine, or does he keep his wine in earthenware jugs? So Omalo. So she said unto him, El B'mai Nirme, tell me, what should he keep them in? So Omalo. So he said to her, Atun Dechashidutu. You who are such important people, he says, Roma b'moni the dav of the kasput, you should keep your wine in vessels of gold and silver. So she went and she told her father. Mm-hmm. And what happened? So Ramula Khamra, so they talk and put the wine into b'moni the dav of the kasput, into vessels of gold and silver. The takif, and the wine turned sour. So also the Amule, so they came and they said unto him, meaning not just so also the Amule, they came and they said to him, meaning to to Caesar. Okay? Mm-hmm. Why did you tell us to put it in there? So Amar Lolabarto, so he said to his daughter, Manu Malacho Hochi, who told you to do this? So Amalei, so she said, Rabbi Yeshua Ben Chananya is the one. So Krayuhu, so they called him. Amalei, and he said to him, Amai Amit Lo Hochi. So Caesar wants to know, why did you tell her this? So Amalei, so he said to her, he said to him, said to Caesar, he said, Kehechi de Amalei, I said to her exactly what she said to me. So, in other words, you know, tit for tat, so to speak. She says that you have to put, you know, that such wisdom should be in a beautiful jug and not in an ugly one. So I said, in that case, then wine belongs in the, you know, if you're a big shot, it belongs in the gold and silver, not in the other one.
Not in earthen crown,
right.
Yes.
So now the Gemara says, Vaho Ika Shapire. The Gemire, but aren't there handsome people also who are well learned?
Who are what?
Well learned.
Oh, well learned.
Right.
Yeah.
Gemire, you know. Like the word Gemara is learning,
yeah.
Okay? Yeah. So what was Rabbi Yoshua's answer? He said, you know, if they had been a little bit uglier, they would have learned more.
Shapiro means handsome.
Shapiro,
right?
Yeah, beautiful.
Right.
Handsome, beautiful.
Shapiro?
Yeah.
That's one of his
words. Beautiful, right. Okay. All right, I think that we're going to stop at this particular point.
Finished
quite a bit. First line, so, yeah. First line at the top.
First right, so we start right on the top
of Ahmed Bey's.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Ahmed Bey's, plot.
Yeah.
Science.
I'll tell you what, let's do a couple of more lines and then I'll stop, okay?
Okay.
Because this is sort of in line. So Dovaracher, another interpretation about these three mashkin, you know, wine,
mm-hmm.
And milk and water, right? So it says, Shloisha mashkin alolo einis solon ala behesach hadas. These three liquids can become fossil only through neglect. So likewise, if we compare Torah to these three liquids,
yes.
It indicates to us that if we neglect them, then they become puzzles. In other words, they become brainless. So we'll stop at this particular point. Okay? So we'll start on line 4. Hashem. Okay, 7:15 again next week. Start
week.
New time.
Next getting week, the longer.
We'll move to probably 7:30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, okay, sir.
Yeah.
Does that mean that we are supposed to be resurrected in body?
Yes,
sir.
I have your picture
yeah.
too.
In body?
In body.
Okay, so how about the people who lost part of their insides
oh,
through or limbs through whatever reason.
There are 29.
The answer is with a Benichel item, if you can make a nest, like Tzviya Tzemeisim, you can make a nest also.
Hall.
That.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. But it was envisioned, you know, that a body is themselves would become the United.
All right, the next question. If we're told that spirit moves from body to body,
how
X number of bodies going to have the same thing?
Well, I don't understand what you mean by spirit.